Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast, Tuesday, August 9th, 2022.
I'm 40.
Alongside old ass Ian Ferguson.
40-year-old Ferguson.
Older ass Pat Conklin. On the show today.
We're really aging out of our market.
Yeah. On the show today, we're talking about Warner Brothers / Discovery. Shelving every possible project in sight.
Just fucking
willy-nilly.
Like a backroom worker. Shelved.
Talking about the gaming pandemic boom possibly ending. Someone leaked internal television and Miko docs. It was going to happen at some point.
Damn right.
The latest Heritage Auction sealed game results. And more. Should I do it? Happy birthday, Ian. Happy birthday.
Thank
Put
you.
Put it on for a little bit.
All right. We have used this hat so many times that the elastic is very loose.
All right. You got a weird shaped head, Ian. What can I say?
No, this is very loose elastic, sir.
Oh, okay. Maybe your beard made it. That's a dollar store special. The tag's still on it. I got a present for you.
Thank you.
I got a present.
It's well done.
What's for our audience? What's the wrapping paper?
It is DC wrapping paper.
Like Green Lantern, Superman, Flash, Batman, Justice League, Wonder Woman.
Yeah, the boys and girls opening now. That's what I'm doing. Oh, all right. Oh, that is very... Oh, that's wonderful. That is wonderful. It is Kirby doing the scream.
It's the scream painting from Edvard Munch, 1893, the famous painting, doing the Kevin McAllister from Home Alone.
I love this. This is very Kirby. Sweet. Very sweet.
Look at this. Look at that. That's Isn't wonderful. That beautiful?
Thank you so much.
Is the card in there of the artist? Shit, did I put the card down? I'm sorry, it was an artist from Comic-Con.
Oh.
I have the card somewhere. I should include it to give him a shout-out.
We can shout them out later.
Is it back anywhere? No, it's not. But, very nice.
Yes, it's thank wonderful. You. I appreciate it very much.
You're welcome.
Very sweet.
I say thank you for liking it, which is weird.
Yeah, thank you. thank you for liking it.
We'll put it on the wall there. We could feature it for the podcast.
Yeah.
Why can't we feature it? Perfect.
There we go.
It can stay there the whole podcast.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
We haven't added art to the wall in a while. Yeah. We could if we wanted to. We could replace Mario's keys with them if we wanted to.
I'm going to find him a nice spot in my little corner.
All right, this goes back in the garage for next year.
Yep.
There's the tag, party hat. Chapeau de fête.
I think we've used that party hat.
Imported from...
At least three years ago.
Oh, it's from
now.
French Canada. There you go. Made in China, but imported from Canada. All right, I'm not sure how that works, but okay.
There you go.
And these are like dollar store packs of stuff. It's made at dollar store. It's like the New Year's festive pack. There's like 8 or 9 of these. I don't like this one, though. No. You need the noise.
You need the noise.
You need the combo one.
Right. Exactly.
I don't have the combo one. And I try to do this. I try to do the insertion. What? Oh, there you go.
There you go.
There you go. Enough air in the lungs to do the combo.
Just got to grip it down by the bottom.
Is that how it works?
Yeah. I think so.
You got to squeeze the vein?
Yeah. God.
We talked about a really awkward situation with a lady friend.
It was awkward.
At Castle Country. That's why you want to go to patreon.com/CU podcast and listen all about how awkward it was. Ian was gritting his teeth while listening to it.
Yeah. Pull a couple greenbacks right off the top.
Greenbacks.
Give them to us and hear about
Get
pets.
One of those dollar guns.
Yeah.
I thought about buying one.
A dollar gun?
One of the dollar guns. In case I ever went to the strip club with a friend, I'd be like, that'd be fun to do that. Just fire them off.
So,
for like 15, 20 bucks.
Not only is it my birthday, but apparently Spider-Man has recently celebrated a birthday.
The comic turned 60.
Yeah.
So if you were doing the age, that means Spider-Man technically would be 75 because he starts out as a 15-year-old. So Amazing Fantasy 15, which was Amazing Adult Fantasy before that, which featured mostly weird sci-fi stories and monsters.
Right.
Because that's what all Marvel did for like 10 years.
Yeah.
In between, like in the 50s, there wasn't really superheroes. Captain America was gone by 54. They basically just stopped doing superhero stories. DC always did, but Marvel was like, all right, no more Submariner and original Human Torch, and we're done with this stuff, and no more Cap. Cap was done in, I think, 54. So there was a time period where Marvel was doing these monster stuff, and so Spider-Man made an appearance. This is like, you know, less than a year after Fantastic Four was the first superhero thing that Marvel had done in forever, which really kickstarted the Silver Age with Marvel. That was 61. And then you had Spider-Man was like the second big one that came around. And that's what the 1-2 punch basically restarted interest in comic books. Because at DC, it was doing the same fucking shitty weekly stories forever. Story arcs. It was all for kid shit.
Yeah.
Not even teenager level things. Oh, Superman this week beats a guy where his power is I don't know, throwing nunchucks at you. I don't know. It's it's like, you know, like the one-off villains. Like, who cares? Right, we're gonna Batman.
The number cruncher.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The number cruncher. He like throws numbers at you. I don't know. You don't, but seriously, so Marvel, it was, but actually, here's the thing, it was August 62, but the issue came out supposedly in May, so.
Right.
Yeah. So I share a birthday month with Pac-Man and Spider-Man, two things I love. That's all I got.
That's all I got on it, too. I will say what was a great birthday treat for me, and we'll get a little bit into this, try to be spoiler-free here.
We're going to try, if you don't want spoilers for Prey, the latest in the Predator franchise that came out on Hulu. Please skip forward. We'll give you like 10 seconds to skip forward. You need to skip forward like 10 minutes. We're at 6 minutes in. Go to like 17 to be safe. Give them a bump
in the down arrow, the link, the thing that you press to.
What?
Timestamp.
Give them a timestamp?
Give them a timestamp.
For the intro? It's hard to do that in the audio version, though. The audio version, you're in your car.
Well, okay. I mean, if this is the audio version, you're gonna have to
go see. Go watch Prey.
Go watch Prey,
or skip to like skip. Go on your iPod if you have an iPod and scroll forward. That's enough spoiler time. So Prey comes out, Ian.
So Prey is out. I watched it over the weekend. You were really looking forward to it. I thought the trailer gave me some cautious optimism. I'll cut to the chase. Just I loved it. I know you were less into it, but I enjoyed it.
I didn't hate it.
I thought it was well paced. I thought it was shot. The nature shots were gorgeous.
A lot of drone shots, obviously. That's the thing. But where did they film this thing? I want to say they filmed it something like in Wyoming or Northwest. It was gorgeous where they actually filmed the real stuff, which I'll get into.
Yeah,
it was insane.
Just beautiful, beautiful countryside shots.
I was in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Oh, Northwest, I was close.
I thought the movie was good. Yeah, I it starts, it's the tale of a Comanche woman who wants to become a hunter. And, she goes out hunting with her brother and the other members of the tribe, and she can never, exactly quite get it. And, Predator lands. The landing of the Predator ship is probably one of my least favorite scenes in the movie.
Okay.
It just looked bad.
Terrible. See, here's the problem. The budget was not big enough for this to be like a wide release. I think it was only $90 million.
Right.
Like that. So that's not enough for a Predator movie. So they probably figured, well, this won't make it back in theaters because the last Predator movies have done awful. The Predator did not do well and was not well reviewed.
Yeah, I haven't actually seen it.
AVP2 was horribly reviewed.
Predators was okay.
Predators, from what I've seen, is okay, but I think the Predator franchise is a weird sort of franchise because it's sci-fi, but it's also horror and suspense, and it's hard to carry that over through multiple pictures nowadays.
Predators is weird because on paper it should be great.
The Predators movie, you mean?
Predators movie.
Okay, from 2007 or 8?
It looks great, but it's kind of boring.
Okay.
Just like, we're hitting these beats, we've got, like, it's, I don't know. Wasn't my favorite. Anyway, so Predator lands and Predator as far as I could tell, the first time the predators landed on Earth.
Yes, that's the big thing. It's the first time a predator. Now, there's two species of predator, which I guess they revealed in Predators. This is the taller, hulkier predator. The predator is big enough, like 7 feet. This is like a 9-10 foot predator. And so it's the first time any predator has been on planet Earth.
And they show that well.
1719.
They show that well. They show the predator, you know, basically starting with the smaller, scrappier animals like dogs and working their way up.
Wolf.
Well, wolf. Yeah. And working their way up through the snake, wolf, spoiler, bear.
Buffalo.
Buffalo. Actually, it didn't kill the buffalo.
Oh, the hunters, the trappers. Spoilers,
the trappers killed the buffalo. So he works his way up and basically, you know, catches wind of the hunting party, the Comanche hunting party, and you know, basically starts to kind of show interest in them. What am I saying? Well, I was basically just giving a brief recap of it. One, the Naru, the lead, ends up getting kidnapped by a bunch of trappers.
That's about halfway through the movie, and that's where my interest started tail off.
55 minutes, I think, in is when they come in.
About that. So a little more than half. It's like a 95-minute movie, right. Something like that. 90-minute, 95.
At that point, you know, it starts to show you, I think, the Predator's code, how, you know, they don't want to go for bait. They want, you know, an active, healthy hunter, essentially, to go after, because this is sport for them. So they're looking for...
But this is a less honorable predator.
Sure.
Way less honorable. And that's what...
I don't know that he's less honorable.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
I don't know. How so? Yeah.
One-on-one combat being fully in camouflage when it was melee combat. That wasn't honorable. The spoilers, after getting its ass almost handed to him by the brother, then having to fucking disappear.
Yeah. And just, okay. No, you're fair. Yeah. You're right there.
There was some really weird stuff happened with that. But then when Yoshi told me there's two different species of predator.
Yes.
And this is the less noble one. The ones in the first movies are the noble one. They would never do some of this stuff. I was like, okay, that makes sense. Like, I don't like the fact that it killed a wolf. There's no sport in killing a wolf. You're so much bigger.
Well, that's what I was saying. You know. I felt like they were doing that to basically because it's never been here, so it's testing out the waters and seeing what is and what that's what I mean by moving up through the hierarchy. It starts low and then basically ends up at human.
So I think I love the first, I guess, 55 minutes because it was very self-contained. You're with the tribe and the hunting group of like five of them. With the brother. The brother, played by Dakota Beavers as Tabby, was incredible.
He's so fucking good. Both of them were great.
But I wish the movie centered around him because he was a legitimate badass warrior. The highlight of the film was him taking on the Predator one-on-one to me. And I was just like, if I had more of that, I think I would have liked it even more.
Amber
Midthunder played Naru.
Yeah.
And Dale DeLuggero as the Predator. The Predator was, I guess, a combination of a suit and CG. I did not like the CG, but they wanted to go for the huge version. I wish they could have just done the suit because I think it looked so much better, but they wanted a huge hulking thing. It was like a 9 foot tall, 9 feet tall. It's gigantic, this Predator. And like a human is not that big and not that huge and wide. CG was shaky in places.
There were some spots where the early going CG, I think, was the worst.
The cat looked bad. The mountain lion looked really bad.
But it improved slightly. Is it like the bear looked better than the cat?
Yes. They put their money there, which is better.
Yeah.
Because it's more important. To me, that was a highlight of the film. It was like just the small party. What's going on? Is something out there when she gets basically hunted between the bear and the predator? And then she escapes into the wood.
Into the beaver dam.
Then the bear comes like, I'm like, this is fucking cool. I said, this is really cool. And then once you get to the trappers, it becomes just, okay, let's have the predator kill as many people as possible in a cool way. And I get that's part of a predator film.
Yeah.
But compared to the ones I like the first Predator, where it's more drawn out and it's done like, there's not a huge amount of deaths. that happened with the Predator. It's like spaced out one at a time until the end where there's a few. I'm like, that's what I thought. I thought that's what the movie was going to be. I thought the movie was going to be the Predator hunting down the Comanche. And that's not what the movie is. And I'm just like, okay.
Yeah, it was a little different than I expected, but I guess it just didn't bother me as much. I felt like they balanced the slow stuff fairly well with the action. I enjoyed it. I mean, is it perfect? No, but it's a lot better than I expected was going to be for a 90 million, like a movie on a small budget. I mean, it's the first medium genuine, budget. It's the first, yeah. It's the first genuine shot in the arm I feel like the Predator franchise has had because it's getting well reviewed. It's getting better reviews than the Predator by far.
That sounded like a disaster. I don't want to see that after the reviews of that. That sounded like that was a disaster.
You know, Predators was, like I said, it was fine, but it was just so by the books that no one got excited about it. People seem fairly excited about this. It was at 93% on Rotten Tomatoes a few days ago. I don't know where it's at now.
Here's some of the top critics. I kind of agree with this. Like, the result is pretty fun, if also a tonal mishmash of goofiness and gorgeous landscape. That's what I mean. This movie's more goofy than I thought it would be. That's the thing. I know some Predator stuff is goofy going back to the first film, but once you got to the Commandos, Arnold stuff versus the Predator, it wasn't goofy anymore. It was like, it was as real as you could have gotten with that. And that's what I thought this was going to be. And it just went off the deep end, I thought, with the trappers. And that's what pulled me out when it was obviously the CG stuff, when it was the group of trappers versus the Predator. That was not a real wilderness, obviously. And that's what pulled me out. And obviously there's an expense to that because, you know, Yoshi told me that they were going to film. Like, I thought when I saw the camp, I was like, oh, the Predator is going to come at me at the camp. I said, this is going to be cool.
Right.
They did that. It would have cost a ton of money to integrate CG into a real environment. That's what the cost is. So
yeah, I would have preferred that to have happened.
That would have been
there.
Like nuts.
Yes.
Just rampaging the camp.
That's what I would have liked to have seen. Yes.
But they did it in this like sort of like weird foggy area with like no trees. And I'm like, this is fake. This is not a real thing happening.
Right.
And that's what kind of took me out. You see a lot of cool Predator kills. Someone got on your timeline and said, this is a sanitized Predator. This is an extremely violent film.
Yeah.
Extremely violent. Violence in the Predator movies I remember. Like way more.
Yeah, they called it sanitized for YouTube sanitized for the streaming generation.
There's at least 5 beheadings that I saw in this movie, at least, right? 4 or 5.
Well, they kind of went into that. They were like, there was no like military stuff, no guns. So what they wanted I think, a more machismo like influenced movie. They wanted more guns and action, I think.
But it's you're talking flintlock muskets and pistols.
I don't know. I didn't argue with the person. I'm sure they're nice, but I was just like, this is not a sanitized movie at all.
Brutal melee combat.
I enjoyed it all, but I was like, when there's a point where, you know, a character loses an arm and gets a couple legs chopped off.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's there. They're blood going everywhere. Yeah. Like it's not.
There's a lot of amputations going on.
Yeah. They don't cut. See, they don't cut away.
There's a couple times where I think they cut away because the effects budget, like you kind of see something happen a little off.
But it's more for the effects reasons, not because they didn't want to show blood.
There's a lot of blood in this movie. Like it's not too much, but I'm like, you went from very little to like now there's a ton of it. And I'm just like, okay, I see. So like I said, I didn't hate it. I liked it. I just wasn't over the moon about it because in my head, I guess I built up something else. I thought it was going to be brother and sister fighting together for the most of it. That's what I was like, oh, this is going to be cool teaming up because she's still learning how to be a warrior and he's obviously a seasoned warrior. And I was like, okay, that's fine. You want to do it that way? That's fine. I'll just say this. The one goofy thing was the hatchet on a rope.
Oh, yeah. No, that was
looks cool on paper, extremely unrealistic and impractical as a weapon.
I let it go because it's a fucking action movie. But when she threw it, I was like, and she pulled it, I was like, oh, that's going to go right into her forehead.
Like, yeah, that hatchet's going to spin or turn around and kill her.
Yeah.
Or take out an arm.
I know it was to make it look cool, but like that, I think more than anything, more than a 9-foot-tall alien, that pulled me out of reality. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Suspension of disbelief stops here.
Because they throw in the hatchet. Obviously, she knows how to use a bow and arrow a little bit. She's not as seasoned.
I get it. She wants to get that hatchet to come back because they show her learning with the hatchet and becoming skilled with it, but that's not the way to do it.
No, that's not a thing.
Right.
That's not a thing.
Yeah.
I think
there's a reason why you've never seen that, because you'd lose your hand.
Yes, like or lose your face. Like they could have just had her have like a handful of hatchets.
I would have said just have a couple,
because that's what a warrior would have done. Yeah. You have like some throwing hatchets. You're not going to have, you know, and bow and arrow, But no, like I said, they had to throw the cute dog in. I didn't mind the cute dog.
No, neither did I. I liked the dog.
You couldn't kill off. You can't ever kill off a dog.
Well, you can, but people don't like it.
No. The wolf is fine. It's a wolf.
Yeah.
But so yeah, no, I enjoyed it. I was talking and I was thinking, you know, how about you go feudal Japan Predator? That'd be pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, that would be cool.
If you're going to do these different regions and time period, and feudal Japan went up to like the late 1800s, so you can do like early 1800s. You can do it.
Yeah, I think there's not to like dwell on it for too much longer, but I do think there is room here for them to keep doing these Predator movies similar to that.
They shouldn't have said this was the first one, because I would have backed further. How about you go medieval Predator?
Right.
With knights or a knight. Like, they shouldn't have said it. You shouldn't have said this was the first one, but there's still some things you could do.
Yes.
There's still some things you can do. Different areas of the world, maybe. Or
yeah, I'm thinking like different areas of the world, too. It doesn't all have to be American plains. Like you said, feudal Japan.
Feudal Japan.
Africa would be cool.
Yeah, why not? Let's do it up. Now it's the Perfect Warrior show that was on Spike 12 years ago. The Perfect Warrior! Remember that? I used to love that stupid show. It was a game.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I know they made a game of it, too.
You know what's a game? Warner Brothers Discovery, not knowing what the hell they're doing after this takeover. Discovery bought out the Warner Brothers stuff. What was
just
it, last
year?
So
widely panned, too, by people.
The
like...
stuff that they're doing... they're doing we have done a reset. We've restructured the business where we're going to focus, where there will be a team with a 10-year plan focusing just on DC. I mean, that's great, but you have stuff already in the pipeline that you can't just toss it all out. You got an Aquaman sequel coming out.
Yeah.
You got this Flashpoint movie with a star that's run amok with everything. You have now this Batgirl film that they filmed. Was in post-production, not a small amount of money.
$90 million.
This was $90 million. Not the Prey was. This was $90 million. That's what was in my head.
I was wondering if that... Let me see what the Prey budget was.
Prey budget might have been less than $90 million, probably. I don't know if that's available. But this was a $90 million movie that was going to be seen by a decent amount of people, if not just on HBO Max, Ian. And now they are shelving a major superhero movie. Shelving it. You'll never see this. You'll never see it. And it's part of the DC stuff. It was supposed to reintroduce, I think, Michael Keaton Batman was going to be in this.
Yeah.
And so that's fucking gone. And so because that's supposedly Michael Keaton Batman is going to be written out of the Aquaman movie that he was supposed to be in. And it's supposed to be in the Flashpoint. Like, what the fuck is happening?
I want to see
Michael Keaton Batman. You know, Brendan Fraser is going to be the villain. In it, we all want to see good old Brendan Fraser on his comeback.
Yep. $88 million was Predator or Prey.
Okay, so around the same amount.
Yeah.
So this is insane. I don't remember ever this happening in our lifetime.
No.
Where the movie was done and not direct to video, not direct to streaming. You guys are never going to see it. We're not even going to try to recoup any cost. The cost is already paid for, like it's paid for most of it.
Yeah.
This is insane.
I don't understand how stockholders would let someone do this. You're literally saying no to money.
I don't care if this is, you say this is an Elseworld tale and you put it on fucking, you can buy it for $10 on HBO Max. You're getting no return on investment at all.
Yeah.
Like you're burning money.
It's just bad fucking business.
Yes. David Zaslav, I guess, took over from Discovery. We're not going to release any film before it's ready. We're not going to release a film to make a quarter. We're not going to release a film. The focus is going to have to be how do we make each of these films in general as good as possible. I understand that, but this was already made.
It's done.
Do something with it.
Right.
I'm not saying you have to have it come out in 3,000 screens around the U.S. Do something with it. It's a slap in the face of the people that worked on the film.
Yeah.
Less so than, I mean, the fans as well, but the people that actually worked in this film. The actor who played Batgirl is probably heartbroken. It's like, I guess I'm not in the DC universe,
right?
I guess, you know?
Well, and what's crazier, though, is, I'm not going to bang this too much, but Ezra Miller, I mean, they're going insane. And the Flash movie has not been canceled. So again, this looks like this, especially with some of how he's talked, this sounds misogynistic, or at least it's mind blowing to me that one would be shelved without the other being shelved,
well,
especially with the news.
I would make the argument, playing devil's advocate, that Flash already appeared in a few films There's more on the line. It's a much bigger budget, you know.
But if they're gonna, if he's gonna fucking, you know, scuttle it all and just do a new 10-year plan, I mean, what's it matter?
Well, that's the thing. I think that's what's bullshit. Saying there's a 10-year plan,
which not the first time they've said
which
it.
Which they should have done originally. We said it 9 years ago. We said, you got to copy the Marvel model. You got to build up individual movies first. You can't just jump into fucking Justice League. That was insane that they did that.
Well, even more insane was Batman v Superman without a Batman movie to lead into it.
That was nuts.
That's still crazy to me. Yeah.
Insane. They gave Zack Snyder the keys, and we haven't had a solo Superman movie. People begging for another super.
Not since Man of Steel.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's been almost 10 years. Henry Cavill wants to do it. He's begging to do it. Your biggest hero, you don't have a movie, a solo film in like almost 10 years. It's nuts how much they've mismanaged this. It's nuts. It's nuts.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I know it's hard to write Superman well, but like I think there would have been people love the betrayal. You could have done it. You could have figured it out. You could have figured
Cavill
it out.
Cavill makes a good Superman. I don't think Zack Snyder writes a good Superman.
No. He's horrible to do these movies, obviously. Yeah.
But Cavill fucking, I mean, he nailed the Clark Kent and Superman look.
Likes the character. He's in shape.
He looks like Clark Kent.
He's still relatively young to do. I think he's probably mid to late 30s. So like he can still do it. 40 is a new 30. Ask Ian.
That's right.
So I mean, like, people don't age the way you
do. Cavill is 39 years old.
39. You can still do Superman until your 40s.
Yeah.
You can do that. You stay in shape. You know, you're fine. You're good to go. I can't believe that. I really can't believe that. They've wasted all of that. And then they're bringing back, it's such a mess. They're bringing back Affleck's back as Batman in one of these movies. I forget which one he's going to be in. Affleck's back as Batman in one of these. I don't know if it's Aquaman 2. I forget. But you have the new Batman in a different universe. Yeah, and you have, they're doing a Joker sequel, which is another offshoot universe.
Right.
They have, and then a new Harley Quinn in that universe.
Did you watch the Batman?
I haven't seen it yet.
That was good.
It seems good, but from it being 3 hours long, it sounds like an overly long director's cut. I'd rather see like a 2.5 hour
version. Honestly, I thought it went pretty fast. It didn't feel like it dragged to me. I enjoyed it.
So you're going to have two Harley Quinns. You have at least two Jokers, at least two Batman.
Do we have two Harley Quinns?
They just announced the new Harley Quinn like yesterday.
Oh, geez. Okay.
For Joker 2, because it's a different universe.
Oh, right. God damn.
So, yeah. So you don't know what? Yeah, it's ridiculous. Who was just? It was what's her name? Singer. The singer was announced, and I think she'll do probably a decent job. It'll be a more serious version of it because that's a more serious version. Let's see. Yeah, Lady Gaga.
Oh,
Lady Gaga's gonna be a new Harley Quinn.
Interesting.
I think she'll be fine.
Sure,
but like the point is this: it confuses casual people when you have all these different fucking things going on.
Right. None of it links.
Because the new Pattinson Batman introduced a Joker as well, which they released the deleted scene.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a new Joker. So it's like fucking four Jokers are going on, or three. Like it's.
Yeah, they don't know what they're
doing. So on that level, I understand, but please let us see these movies. If you have to do reshoots to make them work better, I get that. But I wanted to see Brendan Fraser.
Me too. I did.
I was interested because of that alone.
Michael Keaton, too.
Yeah.
All of it. I dabble in Batgirl comics, and I like the character. I would be interested in seeing Michael Keaton reprise the role, and I love Brendan Fraser.
Yeah. Kevin Smith says, it's incredibly bad look to cancel the Latina Batgirl movie. I don't give a shit if the movie was absolute fucking dogs shit. Man, I guarantee you that it wasn't. Okay, well, you said two different things, okay, but yeah. I can't remember the last time this happened.
No, it's really, really strange.
A movie on that budget, you never see the light of it. You're going to say, the Fantastic Four movie from 93 or whatever. That was made for $1 million to keep the rights. It was never going to be like a big release.
Right.
That's totally different than this. And that's actually, when you go back and watch that, the narrative isn't bad. I mean, I'm being serious. Like, if you ever watch that, it's on YouTube.
I've never watched it.
Doctor Doom, they got right for a movie on that small. And Doctor Doom, actually, the costume's actually pretty good, even though there's no budget. Like, Doctor Doom costume was pretty. You ever saw Doctor Doom costume in that movie?
No.
It looks like Doctor Doom. Like, Thing looks like Thing. There's no budget. It's a, you know, Roger Corman movie, but like... It's
supposed to be 1993.
I think 93, 94, Doctor Doom. Look up Doctor Doom Corman. And you'll see. Like, it's pretty good.
Corman, K-O-R-M-A-N. Yes.
Like, it looks better than the fucking shitty one, the Fantastic Four reboot from 2015.
Yeah, it's not bad.
It's a better looking. That's Doctor Doom.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's pretty good. And then Thing looked okay. They managed to make like things like mouth move when it talked in the costume. Yeah, no, not a problem with it. $1 million. And then I think Marvel bought it and they fucking destroyed everything because they went over receipts. But they're so you get bad VHS transfers out there.
Right.
So all right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know where there's no grooming of minors? Ultimate Nintendo.
Wait, what? What are you talking about there? Well, grooming? What? What? I think you skipped over. Wait a second. Well, there is an ultimatenintendo.com. You can find books and enamel pins.
No grooming.
It's been alleged that Ezra Miller had a cult and was grooming at least one minor to go on. I think we had to say that before you go into the segue.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Ezra Miller has been accused of harassment and grooming. And I think there was a felony burglary charge in Vermont that's come up in the past couple of days. So
they exhibit cult-like behavior. No one was ever really allowed to disagree with them. Their reality painted everyone else's reality. They sound like a mess, a fucking mess.
Oh yeah. But there's a huge movie coming out next year with them starring.
Yeah. So
that's supposed to like kind of reset the whole DC like movie universe.
Yes. This was the time that they were going to reset and enact their 10-year plan.
I guess
this is the start of the 10-year plan.
I guess they were going to bring in Robert Pattinson's Batman, maybe, and maybe Joaquin Phoenix's Joker to like bring it all together potentially, which would have been interesting. But
maybe Miller's Flash can die during Flashpoint,
or you just bring in another one. People were saying, "What about the TV guy?"
Yeah,
bring in the TV actor to do it. You know, do that. That show's, and it's been for 9 years. That Flash.
That was another thing that didn't make sense to me, was using different actors for the same character. Where it's not the '90s anymore. I know,
because they had the TV universe, the Arrow universe, and whatever. There's only one universe, ultimatenintendo.com, the universe.
Yep, there it is.
The universe to get your RBI baseball stickers, enamel pins that you can't see because the screen painting's in front of it, and the books. I'll be on Twitch Wednesday, twitch.tv/ContraCode, and we will be at the Long Island Retro Gaming Expo, the triumphant East Coast return.
Can't wait.
That is August 13th and 14th in Long Island, right outside Nassau Coliseum. We're going to have a great time. We'll be there with friends, having the best pizza we can possibly eat, gorging ourselves on the best pizza as well. What else is going on, Ian? What we got going on here?
Oh.
We got a Pac-Man movie.
Got a Pac-Man movie, a live-action Pac-Man movie coming.
Okay. How is that going to work? From the Hollywood Reporter. Yeah, news on the back lot of Hollywood.
Yeah, I don't know how it's going to work. The company behind Pac-Man and Wayfarer Studios, the production company founded by Justin Baldoni and Steve Sarowitz. I don't know what Wayfarer Studios has done, so I'm going to take it. Oh, the project will be based on an original idea from Chuck Williams, who did Sonic the Hedgehog, of Lightbeam Entertainment.
Great.
So that means we're probably going to get at least one Pac-Man with human teeth. If people don't.
No, more importantly, we're going to go with the cheap. Oh, Pac-Man busts out of the video game into reality where he's hanging out with some fucking dude. And they do a little, God, I don't want to see this. Just do an animated movie. Pac-Man is not beloved enough. I hate to say as much as Sonic is to a younger, more prime audience for it.
Sure.
To do that sort of treatment. Just do an animated movie and put it out on fucking Amazon or a streaming service. This is not good to me, this idea.
No, it's not. No. I'm trying to see what else they've done. Come on, Wayfarers.
Their upcoming slate includes football drama The Senior and coming of age dramedy Empire Waste. Waste as in the part of your body, not waste. Great.
Yeah, I can't find a whole lot about what they've done.
I'm excited.
Five movies I have not heard of, such as 5 Feet Apart, It Ends With Me, Clouds.
What's the Variety article say about this? Is there anything plot? There's no plot about this. The ubiquitous video game in which a starving Pac-Man chomps his way through a maze while attempting to evade daily ghosts. Blah, 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 blah. God.
Yeah, there's really not a whole lot here.
All right.
Anyways, so that'll be awful.
I'll bet $100 it's going to be Pac-Man coming into our reality, just like the Smurfs movie did.
Yep.
Just like Sonic did, and it's like the most boring fucking thing to me to do that. Oh, Pac-Man discovers he can't really do. Where are the dots to eat? I gotta eat other circular sized objects. Oh my god!
It's definitely going to be a montage of him eating circle sized fruits and spitting some out and enjoying some.
Oh god! My hair hurts.
Yeah.
From that, this is cool news.
This is very good news.
Is this big news, Ian?
This is big news. I'm not going to do it if you're just going to rely on the board. Never again. While doing what? This is from unlisted cheats at new_cheats_news. While doing some request work, I casually found some new cheats in Super Punch-Out for the SNES. All secret codes in this game use two-button combinations. Two of them are known, sound test and Japanese name input.
Oh,
but there are two more.
Oh.
And these are actually for the second player controls you're supposed to press. At the title, hold Y and R, then press A or start.
Okay.
So what that brings is a screen where it shows whatever, it's not, his name's not Little Mac, but whatever the new Punch-Out character is.
What was his name in that one?
I don't know. He doesn't look like Little Mac.
I know nothing about Super Punch-Out lore.
And it brings up a bunch of icons, like fighting game icons, and basically you can pick any of the... you can pick any of the boxers.
Any of the 16 boxers, looks
to, like. To fight against. So you can, basically, you can do practice rounds. However, even crazier, in the free match mode, however, you can also press and hold B and Y, then press A or start. And now the CPU opponent can be controlled from Joypad 2, so you can fight against the real person.
That is nuts.
That's awesome. And people have already shown you can do it with the ROM on Nintendo Switch Online. It's just been there forever and
undocumented code that never appeared in Nintendo Power, never was in a cheat book ever. No one ever knew that. Only Nintendo knew about this. That's it.
Yeah.
And they kept it a secret for all this time.
Yep.
Like, when I hear this, if I had known this was a thing in the actual game, like an actual feature that they advertised, I would have been way more interested in getting this as a kid.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, a two-player mode and Punch-Out?
Yeah.
Like,
that's neat.
This is the most interesting thing, like, hidden thing I think I've heard of in a long time.
Yeah. And it whenever I hear something like this, my interest in video games always gets a little boost again. Because of just how every time you think you've seen it all in games or there's nothing left to come out from, you know, the old days or anything like that, something like this cool happens or this news comes out and all of a sudden it's like, what else is there hiding that we have no ideas about? Even in big name games, like big popular games by big companies.
Oh, yeah. But to me, again, like if they had put this on the box saying this is one of the features of the game, a two-player mode, if it functions okay, and people are always trying to figure out like the special moves for each character, like how you actually deal with the button combination stuff, and like if that's all in the game for each of these boxers, like you can replicate them as you play them. Like I think like one guy regains the health or prances around the ring, like that's pretty impressive.
It's interesting. I have a feeling that they probably didn't put it in there because they didn't think it was going to be well received. Because I could imagine it being kind of clunky. Uneven, the viewpoint is different, but it still sounds like it's functional.
I think people would have taken it for what it was.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It would have taken, this is just a cool little bonus.
Right.
It's not the main draw of the game. This isn't a traditional fighting game. No, I'm like super impressed, and I don't really have experience with this game at all. I'm going to kind of say I never really played it as a kid. My cousin didn't have Super Punch-Out, I don't think. Well, they probably did. I just never played it. They didn't let me get the controller sometime. Come on, Andy, let me get the controller every once in a while. Jesus. So, well, that's fun. Not a shock. We brought this up in the past, Ian. Less than 1% of Netflix subscribers plays their games. I would say less than 1% know that they have games that they could play. That's probably part of the reason.
Well, I constantly forget about it. I forget that there's games I can play.
I turn on my Netflix. I punch up some Knight Rider.
Well, the other thing is I think all of the games are mobile. So you have to access them from your phone.
So it's already weird. I mean,
it's already a step I don't want to take.
I've watched Netflix on my phone, like at a hotel in a pinch, or like I've done that, but like I forget about the app. I forget I can watch it like lying in bed. I forget about it. All of them have apps. Like it's the same technology, but like I forget about these things. The Netflix branded games and all have been downloaded 23.3 million times globally, with around 1.7 million daily users. But that's less than 1% of their Netflix 221 million subscribers. And obviously, that number has been going down. They've been losing subscribers, Netflix.
Right.
These numbers have been climbing steadily since May. So maybe they're marketing it out. Maybe, hey, we got these games. Again, though, like what's their purpose? The purpose is to get people to subscribe to watch their content. You're never going to break through and it be like a game subscription service. Like that's not.
Right.
Why people...
That's never going to be the draw, so it seems like wasted money to put that money into it.
But that's why Netflix is losing subscribers, because they went from doing cool series and things, now, oh, we're going to do another fucking Ryan Reynolds movie. Like, that. No one cares. We don't want to see The Rock and Ryan Reynolds run around in these lower, middle-budget, weird action. Like, that's not
why I watched that movie when I had COVID back home in Buffalo, and I couldn't tell you two things about that movie.
I think I watched it up until the part with the bullfighting scene, or whatever. I'm just like, I'm done.
I don't remember there being a bullfight. It was not great.
I watched a little bit of the one where he was in Ryan Reynolds, where he's part of like the team of the six or whatever they're called. They're like a Mission Impossible team.
Oh yeah.
With Michael Bay producing it or directing it. I was like, I watched 15 minutes. Like, I don't think I need to watch this. This is not why I'm on Netflix. I'm on Netflix to watch season 3 of Knight Rider. That's why I'm on Netflix. I'm so sad there's going to be only a fourth season and no proper ending. Oh, excuse me. Well, Hasselhoff wrote one to be the ending. They didn't use it as the last episode. So I'm going to skip over that one and save it for the last episode.
There you go.
I'm going to not watch it chronological order.
Oh, yeah.
I'm in love with Knight Rider. It's better than you think. It actually is.
Sure.
It wasn't for kids. It was the weird time where you had goofy action stuff in primetime in the 80s. Talked about with Andre. Like, we're never going to see that again.
Oh, no.
Like, these goofy, really over-the-top ideas.
There will never be another A-Team type show on television.
Not primetime, no.
Not prop time, yeah.
No.
Nope.
It's for kids, but also adults.
Yeah.
No one's getting killed, but people get killed in Knight Rider.
We've got the guns adults love, but the no deaths that kids need.
Was anyone ever killed on A-Team? Because people get killed on Knight Rider all the time.
I feel like people were probably killed in the A-Team.
I don't know about that. I'm not so sure about that. No one's ever hit with a gun. We know that with the machine guns. People get murdered on Knight Rider almost every episode. So, all right, you can look that up. Have people ever been killed on the A-Team?
During the entire series, only 5 people died on screen.
5?
Yes.
Oh, like villains that came to a weird end?
I don't know.
That's the problem. So. The problem in Knight Rider, innocent people get killed to set up plots sometimes.
Right.
You see people get, some person gets stabbed, you know, one of the episodes because they're trying to steal something from them. Like, well, okay. This is like Murder, She Wrote stuff that we're seeing here. 5 out of how many episodes?
Like 90 something.
Wow. Okay. Were they earlier on, then they got more sanitized as kids got into it and they put out more toys? Is that what happened probably?
I don't know.
Now I don't know when those deaths occur. Were they all in the first couple of years? You know? Because that show was on for like 5, 6 years. That show. It's on until like 87, I think. Interesting. Uh-oh, you're getting drawn in.
Mad Dog Murdoch was shot twice during the series.
Okay.
And B.A. Mr. T was shot once off screen.
Off screen?
Yeah.
Okay. Michael Knight gets beat up a lot in the show and hurt.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Are we at the end of the boom of the gaming pandemic?
I don't know. It's possible. It, according to Sony, they think it is. Nintendo does not see it that way. Sony had something like a 28% drop-off, I think.
You're up.
Which is...
For the quarter?
Yeah, which is big. But I think that, I mean, there naturally has to be an end to the pandemic boom at some point, because it was a boom. And a lot of these companies probably don't want to admit that it was a boom, but a lot of the money that is in video games right now, whether it's from, you know, retro collectors all the way up to modern day systems, you know, and flipping, you know, PS5 systems, it all came from a place of boredom and isolation and needing something to do and something to do at home. And as people get out more and more, it's only natural that you're going to see a slump. Sales of PlayStation 4 and 5 titles fell from a year earlier. And playtime plunged 15% in the quarter.
Okay, that makes more sense if more people are going back to work or the office.
Microsoft says sales from content and services are down 6%.
Operating profits plunged 37%.
And Nintendo reported its U.S. software sales dropped 23% in the same period.
That's a big drop. If it's year over year, that's a big drop.
It is. And Nintendo is saying, you know, it's a matter of, I think they're trying to write it off as a matter of supply is now being met. You know, all the big
for consoles.
Yeah, for consoles and stuff like that. You know, whereas anything they could put out prior because it was in such demand was selling out immediately. And now that people, you know, can access them.
They've had less big titles too.
They have. There hasn't really. I'm trying. I know Splatoon is coming out. Metroid was earlier.
Metroid.
Dread. That was last year.
Oh, Dread. That's not a huge title, but I see it's something. I'm talking about like AAA. Everyone's gonna get it. Titles. That's what I mean.
Yeah. I don't know.
They haven't had a big one like that in a couple of years at least.
Sure.
I guess you say Animal Crossing was the last one which people didn't expect.
No. I would say something between then and whatever.
Clubhouse Games, there it is. I mean, that did pretty well. Clubhouse Games, that was perfect for the pandemic, folks.
It did. It did do well.
I liked it.
But yeah. Anyway, so back to the question. I do think the boost from the slump is probably starting to end.
And plus, there's less consoles to sell. There's 111 million Switches that have been sold. At some point, you're going to slow down.
Right.
I mean, it's still not miraculous, but holy shit, 111 million Switches.
Yeah, and I think Sony would probably see a bump in their sales if they could actually meet the demand. I mean, PlayStation 5s are still
selling out quickly.
They're still unobtainable. Yeah.
Wow. So. What about the Xboxes? Do people care about Xboxes?
I think you can get an Xbox now if you want to get an Xbox.
Their revenues sank 7%. Microsoft. That's not bad. 7%. They're gonna keep going up every year.
No, I was gonna say it was a 6% loss. I think
console sales declined 11%. Then revenue from gaming content and services dipped 6%. The thing about Nintendo is that being that a lot of the software, especially the first party stuff, is actually exclusive, unlike these other consoles, where a lot of stuff shared between maybe even Steam or PC, they are a little bit more protected. Like when Breath of the Wild 2 comes out, they're going to do gangbusters. I mean,
yeah,
everyone's going to buy it. They're going to sell like 20 million of those at least. 30 million of those are going to sell. So I mean, they're going to be back hitting and out of the park again. That's why Nintendo should go third party. Activision Blizzard had a 70% plunge in net profits and 29% drop in revenues.
Well, I know people don't think like. I think that can also be attributed to the fact that they're a company that's been constantly in the news for issues. And I do think there are people who have made an active choice that, you know, not to support them. I think it's more than just the pandemic stuff when it comes to them, because it doesn't line up with any of the numbers that Nintendo or Microsoft or Sony are talking about either. That is a huge fall off. And I do think the problems and the public's perception of them have probably damaged.
Yeah, it's part of it.
I'm not saying it's all of it, but I do think it played into it. Yes.
That's also before Diablo Immortal came out. So like those numbers aren't in there. So maybe that's going to help. And that finally just came out in China, I think, a couple of weeks ago, because they were going to not come out with it. That finally came out there. It's going to do great there. Well, I'm glad they asked good old Michael Pachter, managing director at Wedbush Securities, his opinion on the matter here. He said that disappointing numbers were largely driven by comparisons with outsized performance a year ago. All right, you got me there, Michael. In other words, companies couldn't match the wildly high numbers they posted in 2021. Everyone saw record numbers during shelter in place, with catalog sales of older titles leading the way. That set up an impossible comparison, and the year-over-year declines were well-telegraphed and were expected. All right, Michael, you got that one right for a change. Electronic Arts is one of the rare companies that defied the gaming contraction, posting a 50% rise in profits.
Okay, interesting.
And revenue growth of 14%.
Hmm.
A lot more loot boxes and ultimate Maybe. Card packs. Yeah. Because of the pandemic, you have to collect this shit. So then it goes into about the shortages and, you know, the semiconductors and things of that nature. Switch isn't slowing down. We didn't bring this up before. It took the entirety of the, what you want to say, 8-year cycle of the Switch, excuse me, of the Wii sales to hit their 101 million. They've hit this in far less years, 111 with the Switch.
Oh yeah.
So this might go to 120. It might go to 130. Like, there's potential still.
It could beat the PS2.
That may be tough. I'll say it won't, but like it's.
I don't think it will, but I mean, it's the first thing that's had a real shot at it.
Yeah, who would have thunk that, right? Who would have thunk that? Well, Ian, birthday boy.
Yeah, got a little gift.
We got a gift this week.
Got a little gift.
This gift is from the Intellivision_Miko Reddit.
Yep.
From user, Tommy. What's the user called on this? Tattling Tommy.
Tattling Tommy.
What was revealed here, Ian?
So we got the pitch deck. All the things are Intellivision convertible note term sheet, whatever. Intellivision fact book. Loose usage of the term facts. The Intellivision pitch deck. Intellivision form of the convertible promissory notes. And Intellivision subscription agreement convertible promissory note stuff. So basically this was all dumped to the Reddit. And we have
said it from a former disgruntled employee.
So here it is, folks. This is how it starts. And this shit's just going to get weirder and weirder as more and more stories come out. The main Intellivision story in my mind is over at this point. We're not going to get a clean wrap up like we all want. It's going to fade away, but give it a couple of years and we're going to get the actual behind the scenes stories.
Yes.
We'll be able to line up what we were saying with what other people are saying and see how accurate we were.
We will be able to have a timeline more of internal events and decisions and who did what, who protested against what employees weren't paid for their work or left, and why these things happened, why they were still looking for people to work on their console 4 months before the console was supposed to come out in October 2020. Like, what happened with these events more? With us outside looking in, we made pretty good guesses that things were happening that were bad, but we'll know in black and white for sure.
So going over the pitch deck first, this is probably from 2020, I think, early 2020.
Looks like it. Closer to that.
16 slides on it, and it's a lot of nonsense. First, I just want to start off with the cover picture, which is a family sitting together.
Family, friends,
sitting in front of a TV screen that has Intellivision bringing family and friends photoshopped on it. The first thing I noticed this morning, and I was like, Jesus Christ, and Pat's like, what? And he says, no, save it for the podcast. The controller that is photoshopped into the woman's hand is scale size of like a hardcover book. That thing is massive in her hands.
Wow. Okay.
Like, look at that. That's huge. That's just, and it is not at all to scale with the controller that the father is holding that also looks kind of too large. But the one she's holding is literally the cover. Like, it's a hardcover book size.
That's a chunky controller.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
That's the first version of the controller where it has the two buttons on the one side. Remember they changed it at the one point to make it more
like the original.
Yeah.
Yeah, where they slid one button down.
And that's the one time Tommy said we were right. When Tommy actually said, like, you guys are right. You called out about the button placement thing.
Right.
And they actually said that. So that this is like maybe earlier than we thought.
Yeah,
you're
maybe
right.
2019. Yeah, 2019.
Because this is where it had the two buttons on the one side. Yeah.
All right. So next slide is the Tommy Tallarico info slide.
Oh, boy. You always want to lead with the CEO in your pitch deck for your product, right? You always want to do that.
Right. With that boy. Awful picture of him from like Guitar Insider magazine or whatever, he looks like he's fucking blown a load into an X.
Okay.
30 plus years in the video game industry.
Uh-huh.
Sure. First to release video game music album on Capitol Records. Okay, maybe. That's highly specific. Emmy Telly Award winner as producer, on-air talent for syndicated video game TV show. People are having trouble digging up whatever that would be.
So the Telly's a Canadian award?
Right.
So he worked on the show up there that I never saw.
If he was on the run or something
whatever
like that.
Whatever the hell it was with Lucas, his friend there.
Victor Lucas. Seems Victor, like a good guy.
Seems like a good guy, but should be critical of his friend more. The Emmy Award, if someone can point that out, that would be fantastic. That where his nice Emmy Award is. Creator, performer of video games, live concerts, longest running orchestral concert.
Bullshit.
Oh, that isn't? I would give him that. No?
Longest running orchestral, what is it, show?
Of all time. Not for just video games.
No, not just for video games.
He means anything?
He means anything. Yeah,
wait a minute.
It's absolutely not true. I can't find it, but like someone immediately had an answer.
We're like the Boston Pops. They do shows constantly beyond that.
He's just lying. He's just lying.
This next one I tried to verify. The Guinness World Record holder for most video games worked on. Okay, that's bullshit because he didn't. We know that.
Right.
It was his LLC that hired out people. The largest orchestral concert of all time at 700,000 plus people, and I kind of looked this up, and I see they're claiming that in China there was over 500,000 people that attended a concert, like in person. Is there a video of this anywhere? If there's a video of this or any evidence, please show me where this is. That's all I'm gonna say. That seems like a tough get.
That does seem pretty crazy.
And a lifetime.
This is the one that I love so much. Okay. Lifetime Achievement Award recipient. No, doesn't tell you what Lifetime Achievement Award it is. It just says Lifetime Achievement Award recipient. We don't know if this is from fucking eating a lot of honeycombs or if this is like, I don't know, collecting box tops.
Well, I think what it was for, Tommy founded his own.
Yes.
The Game Audio Network Guild or GANG. So he founded this sort of little group. And then I think started awarding himself and his friends stuff. And so I think that's what the Lifetime Achievement Award's from.
Gotcha.
I think.
So,
Because, okay, trophies and certificates, you go to their website. And I think, let's see, does Tommy come up on here?
Damn it.
Let's see, does Tommy come up
on here? Damn it.
I think that's where it comes from. Oh, by the way, you can buy a trophy. You can buy your own trophy on this website for the Game Audio Network Guild. Okay, that's weird. You can buy a trophy. Okay. So what's next, you know?
So then there's a slide that goes Nintendo Wii, a case study that goes over some numbers. The big thing to point out here is in blue, in quotes, we're picking up where the Wii left off 14 years ago. Tommy Tallarico. Why would you advertise that? That sounds bad. Hey, we're going to pick up this project from 14 years ago. That's how we're going to be real modern.
That Nintendo decided we already drew all the blood from this stone. We got to move on. Like,
yeah.
If Nintendo still thought they could make money off the Wii, they would have.
They would have. Absolutely, they would have. Yes, they're not going to just not make money.
But Tommy
doesn't know something that... Tommy loves to think he knows
he's
things.
Smarter than Nintendo. Yeah.
Video game market problems is slide 4. Isolating, not user-friendly, violent, complex, expensive, predatory.
Violent above an illustration of a Nintendo Switch console.
I think it's violent. Like Resident Evil or something on there, though.
Predatory.
Yes, predatory.
Showing a mobile game.
iPhone.
Sure.
Expensive $500 Xbox.
He puts predatory on this for like, do you really want to buy this, whatever, this. Yet... you could purchase games from the front of the user interface on the Amico. Remember that?
Yes.
You can literally see stuff you can buy with a click of a button.
Yep.
Like, literally.
I think he means, like, in-app transactions here, but still.
But it's very predatory. We talked about how
predatory it is.
Oh, here's an animation.
Animation
of a game you can purchase.
Right here.
You just got to click on it.
Page 5 is just going over the simple, affordable family shit that he always...
Yeah, this is why you can tell that this was before. It was still at $225 target retail price.
Yes, but this is my favorite thing here. Simple, affordable family talks about what they're doing right underneath this smaller line. Not competing with Sony PlayStation and Microsoft Xbox in the hardcore gamer market. This is the thing that this always drove me nuts with him. And this I guarantee you comes from the secret stuff as well. Just saying that you're not competing in this market against them does not, like,
make it a reality.
Make that a reality. You are absolutely competing with them in this market. And he always, always tried to hammer home, well, no, we're not. And I think he called me out for something like that once early on, because I said that again. I was like, you can't.
You don't decide. Just,
you don't decide the market you're in. The market finds you.
Yeah.
It's the video game market, man. You're competing against these.
Yes.
You are not the only person who's ever had family fucking games.
Yes.
So that got me. Meet Amico, you know, talks about the Karma Gaming Engine patent pending.
Let's stop here for a second. First of all, almost everything on here is false.
Yes.
Almost everything on here is false. The Karma Gaming Engine patent pending was bullshit. Tommy
even said it
in an interview that they knew it was fucking bullshit.
Yep.
It's an ethos. It's not a technology that you can patent. Second, the innovative parental control is patent pending. So they try to do a fucking RFID card key to unlock it. Like, that would be better than a password. You don't think kids could find it laying around in their parents' drawer and just click it on their console, unlock it?
It's an RFID. You can go online and fucking get, get bootleg ones.
It's an overly obtuse way to put parental controls on your system.
Tommy is really interested in kitschy, gimmicky, weird little bullshit that he thinks is going to set him apart.
The touch LCD. It's touch, and I mean the extremely loosest version of that word. You can literally click on things. You're not dragging shit. You're not playing the games on the console.
Right.
You can point at things on the console. You can't bring the game over to there and play it on there. It's not a smartphone.
Two controllers in the box, up to 8 controllers and phones. Well, the last we heard, there was going to be a version with only one controller because the prices had gotten too crazy. And we never, ever saw anything even remotely close to an 8-player game. I don't think we ever really saw anything close to a true 4-player game.
Yeah, we did in the car swipers, maybe the Missile Command, but we never saw 8.
Okay.
I don't think we saw 8. I think we did see 4 a little bit.
Esports for everyone. Patent pending is a thing that was dropped here and never brought up again.
This is how you know it's early 2019. Horror debut at E3 June 2019.
That's right, yeah.
Okay. This is what their debut was. They rented a hotel room off-site, and they got people to check it out, including influencers like John Riggs, Metal Jesus went there. And that's where my source told me, and this has never been refuted by anyone, this is how I know it's right, that they showed off the controllers. The controllers were there, but the console was not obviously close to being finished. It was an orange pie in a shell. And they were just basically running it off of Android environment, the games that they had at the time.
You know, something that I've always wanted to bring up, and I guess never really have, but it's been something that I've thought for, you know, a long time of covering the Amico. They clearly blew all of their money on R&D for the controllers and had nothing else.
I don't think
they never did anything. That's where the progress stops.
But I just think that's where their focus was, because you can't announce a console with no R&D done yet, and there was nothing done when they showed it at Portland in 2018.
Oh, I heard he was basically just wish casting at that point. He was just standing on stage talking about how cool it would be.
No, I've watched the presentation.
Oh, okay.
He literally, the graphics were just what he got from the agency he hired to come up with a physical look for a console, and he just pasted it into his PowerPoint. You can't go from in only 7-8 months to a concept to having a prototype console that you can play with an environment. It's nearly impossible unless you're a huge company like Nintendo doing it,
right, where
you have tons of resources to throw at it. So that was mostly bullshit. Game development. This is where it becomes fraud to me. This is where this is a fucking con.
Yep.
They have all these logos of companies that Mattel, Lego, Warner Brothers, Hasbro, Disney, Marvel, Sesame Street, Universal, Ninja Turtles, Nickelodeon, Atari, Frogger, Telestrations, Earthworm Jim, Paw Patrol, and Wheel of Fortune.
You never had any of this.
You had Atari
for
Missile Command. You thought you had Earthworm Jim at some point. I think they thought they were getting telestrations. After that, though, Ian, there was no evidence that there was development on almost, I think, the rest of these. The rest of the, dozen or so.
There was the Sesame Street. But yeah, there's nothing Nickelodeon. I mean,
they showed Flash game video, right. But there's no evidence they actually worked on the game themselves.
The
40 games at launch, they say at the time.
Yeah. Holy shit.
They said there was 22 playable games at E3. I would love to know what games those actually were. Because I don't think there were 22 playable, so someone can correct me on that. How many were actually playable? There was,
however, with a lot of what they showed in their first video, if we're talking about like that shitty Pong game that was like footballs and basketballs, that's stuff that anyone can slap together. So they probably had like a couple of these cheap ass fucking demos, essentially. But that's
my argument is they've never had 22 playable games ever, even at Turkey Point later on.
Good old Turkey Point.
They had like six, maybe eight. They never had that many. What's next here? The market size is ridiculous, obviously, because they're counting mobile gamers as a huge part of it.
Oh, remember when they did the Crayola event and he immediately started talking about how, hey, we're working on a partnership with Crayola after they did the event. And then like immediately it was like taken off of something because eventually
people are like,
what the fuck are you doing? And I would love to know what those conversations were like. Like, no, we said hi to you because you hosted an event here. Why do you think we're making something for you? And that's also how Tommy operates. He talks to you or you look at him once. He thinks you guys are fucking doing something together.
Sure. The mobile game market, the size, obviously, it's insane because they think that the mobile game market is the same for a home console, and it's not.
Right.
So that's obviously awful market research. And then I love... picking up where we left off 14 years ago.
Again.
Right. And I love it because now they can't even bother to Photoshop. They are holding chunky, awful third party like PS2 or 3 controllers, family.
Yep. It's just a bad look. Hardcore gamers, 200 million. Casual gamers, 3 billion with a couple of circles. Target buyer, mom 30 to 50. Family friendly social media targets, morning TV show promotion, mall tours with GameStop. Leverage and television brand in resurgent retro market. So now, towards the end of it, he constantly hammered home that he wasn't going for hardcore gamers and it wasn't for the retro market. Yet right here, leverage television brands in resurgent retro market, right under target buyer and, mom 30 to 50.
And when you see the vitriol that he came out against us for,
yes,
we knew why, but this really for everyone else shows why what he thought we were saying from the start was harmful. Because he really came after us when we said the Intellivision brand was dead and gone.
Oh yeah,
and
he took it personally.
So if I'm an investor and I don't know anything about the old market or about this, the last thing Tommy will want to see is him Googling or YouTubing us and seeing us saying people that know about the retro game market, we've been in it for 25 years.
Sure.
For us to say this market is dead, you can't do anything with this brand, because here he is trying to pitch it to people to get their investment dollars as a direct point.
Yep.
While at the same time trying to say we're not banking on the Intellivision name in nostalgia. He said that, which is bullshit. So he knew how harmful it was for people like Ian and me pointing out the truth.
Yes.
Because he knew that that it was harmful, because he could say all he wants about, oh, the target buyer is a mom 30 to 50. Notice how he's not going to even bother to say 25, but even 30 to 40 have no idea what the fuck the Intellivision is.
Again, you can say this all you want. It doesn't make it true.
Morning TV show promotion. He really thought he was going to get on Ellen. He really thought he was going to get on
celebrity endorsements. Ellen, Jessica Alba.
Well, Jessica Alba has been endorsing the Switch recently. I don't know if you've seen that.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
She's been loving the Switch Fit stuff. It looks like she's been endorsing that stuff. The new Switch Sports pack. That's right. Right.
Yeah, so what the fuck is this?
No, it's bullshit.
They never endorsed it. You're just, again, wishing.
You think you're going to get into Costco? Costco would have told you what they would want to price it for, not the other way around. They would say, this is the price. We don't care how much you make at it. This is our wholesale price. That would have been impossible.
Chestnut that he loved to bandy about, team, over 600 years of industry experience. How come no one stopped him when he kept talking about this, being like, this is ridiculous. This is a playground boast, Tommy.
What did Perrin Kaplan, former EVP of marketing, ever do at Intellivision Entertainment? Please tell me. Please tell me what she actually did. Please tell me what Kara Acker, VP marketing, 15 plus years in consumer products at Mattel. What did she do besides appear in a pitch video?
Once. Yeah.
What did she do? Well, she wasn't working in the Santa Ana offices 5 days a week. We know that. So what was she doing? What were all these people doing all the time? What was Jason Enos doing every day? What was Bill Fisher doing? What was Scott Sumura doing in Japan? What were these people doing?
Yeah.
They weren't doing anything of material value. We know Jay Allen wasn't doing anything of material value to the company because that's what the SEC document actually said.
Right.
That he had no material involvement. Man. He was just an advisor and that's it.
Yep.
We know these things.
Milestones and road mapping. This is just a bunch of bullshit.
It shows how much money they were getting or trying to get at that time. Yeah, they're trying to get it. So they had the founder put in $600,000 for acquiring the IP and their own a line of credit. Great. Seed round. So, you know, they got a few million there, maybe from David Perry and friends there. And they were trying to get the $7 million up to that point. This is also the time period where I think they knew they were in trouble. The angel investor was gone that I've talked about that was gone or going to be gone. So this is all in that period. Or maybe this is what they pitched to the angel investor that, from my source, decided not to get into it after the E3. Maybe this is what used to potentially hook them in. And they saw it on purse. I said, wow, these games are bullshit. This controller sucks.
Well, that's what I heard was that the 2019 E3 presentation basically was truly Amico's last stand. And it's just been... It's been a dog and pony show ever since.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And then launched in 2020. We knew that was going to happen. The manufacturing was supposed to start when? Look at that. It was supposed to be by like May-ish of 2020. Obviously, this is pre-pandemic. If you started in May to get out for October, that's still cutting it close, but it's probably possible to get out in October. You probably wouldn't be in production, I would guess, March or April, because who knows how long it still is to come over with customs and things. Still could take 2 to 3 months without the pandemic to ship something over. It could take
right
from China, in my experience. E3 promotional tours, that never happened. How about the financial projections?
Oh, God, dude.
So they thought they would do $73 million in total sales the first year. They thought they would do $243 million in 2021. And then in 2022, they thought they were going to do $500 million.
And then in 2023, they thought they were going to do $793 million. They were going to do almost $1 billion in sales. Just fucking insane. No one pulled them down. Like when they were they're just holding helium balloons floating off into space here. No one tried to ground these
people.
They
thought they were going to get a global market share of the entire gaming market up here of 1.25%. They thought they were going to get literally 1.25% of every single person in the world that plays a video game, either on a console, on a computer, on a mobile device. This is insane fucking thinking.
And it's what he had been saying since the beginning, and it's what he used, I think, to get stupid people into it, because he would always say,
we only need 1%.
We just need the smallest slice. We just need 1% of that market, and we're going to be, you know, fucking eating off of gold plates.
1.25% would mean that on my block, there's probably 75, 50 people, maybe 100 next block. Every fucking block of people, block and a half is 100 people. Well, at least one person would have to have an Amico. That's how insane. When you say 1% of the population, 1.2% of the global population.
Right.
That is fucking batshit stuff. Yep. Batshit stuff. For a startup company with no experience.
And in countries where you have to keep in mind that there are countries where TVs are not commonplace or they're shared objects.
Correct,
and,
Ian. Which means that in the developed world, it would have to be even higher than 1%.
Yeah, which means a place like this would have to pick up for that, which means that we're talking like 4 people on every block having a fucking Amico.
Now we're talking,
every block.
Now we're talking like Nintendo, Sony, Xbox sort of stuff, where it's just like, this is just... But they're not competing.
But they're not.
They're not competing.
Right.
They're not competing.
They're not competing when it's convenient.
Now you see why they couldn't get real investors. Because this stuff is fucking insane.
This falls apart in 2 seconds.
This does not pass the smell test.
No.
You don't even need to. I wouldn't need to ask what numbers. When I see 1.25%, I would be like, well, how did you come up with the number? How could you penetrate that market? How, you know how much money you would take for advertising? I'm not even like a big business guy when it comes to like money. How much advertising would you have to do to get 1.25% of the video game market? Like that, I don't know, 100 million a year, 200, 300, 400 million. We're talking an insane amount. You know how much money Coca-Cola spends every year in advertising? And they and they're the number one, and they have to keep spending that money to maintain like the number one. Like, we're talking insane amounts of money in order to for to have brand awareness continue. Look at Ian with his Diet Coke. Why do you think companies that are in number one still spend tons of money? Because they have to protect where they are,
yeah,
let alone trying to break into them. This is nuts.
So the next slide is basically the last slide and is just a real humdinger.
The exit strategy.
Exit strategy. Okay. So here's the thing. Okay. Let me read the exit strategy to you. Oh, wait, there's nothing to read. The exit strategy slide is simply a bunch of corporate logos. We've got Mattel, Disney, Hasbro, Microsoft, Apple, Mixi, Amazon, Nintendo, Facebook, Viacom, Tencent, Comcast, Google, and Sony. The fact that they thought any of these would be interested in picking them up is just, it really, again, goes to show the pie in the sky wishful thinking that, I mean,
what are you, Oculus?
Yeah,
Facebook's going to spend $1 billion or $2 on you? Are you nuts?
For shitty fucking phone games.
I mean, they were dumb for spending that much on Oculus, Facebook, but at least there was a theory behind it.
Right.
At least it's a new technology segment. What do you got? A fucking shitty controller. And you have mobile quality games. So they thought that, Ian, that they'd marched down that road of making $500 million. And some company like, wow, what's going on here? And they were just, oh, we're just going to buy you up.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like they probably thought this was like dropping a big dick on the bargaining table, being like, here's our exit strategy. Notice, we're going to get bought by Disney.
I really hope people out there understand what this says to the people that Tommy was trying to peddle these games to, the people he quote unquote cared about and commiserated with on YouTube and on Nintendo Age. Not Nintendo Age, Atari Age. He never cared about your user experience. He wanted to get out. He was looking for a way out at the start. It wasn't just, we're going to put out a great product, Ian. We're going to have a profitable, good business. We're going to put out games for several years and maybe do a sequel console. He knew this wasn't, first of all, a sustainable thing, probably.
No.
He wanted someone to take the crappy idea and overspend on it.
He was not,
get out.
He wasn't doing this because he wanted to, he didn't even really want to, he wanted to be able to say he did something big in the video game industry, but he didn't actually, this wasn't his life's passion.
No.
From this moment, from this early on, it's clear that he wants to build something and make it as shiny as possible for other people with more money to come and buy him out. So it's never going to be the rest of his life's work. This was him trying to get rich quick again.
This was this pitch deck was to fool people to put in money to build the dream to get a big company to then foolishly put in their money in order to reap the huge rewards.
Reap the rewards.
He wanted that Oculus buyout. He wanted that, hey, we're going to overspend on this, and then you don't ever, and you're the man, Tommy. But you can't do that unless you put all these building blocks in place and have a competent team to make a product and actually release it and get people that actually want your product to spend money over years and years of time and have an actual market develop. Like these, it's easier than it looks, huh, Tommy? Well, excuse me, it's harder than it looks. He thought it was easier.
Yes, harder than it looks. It's all good. We're there. We gotcha.
Then there was also the internal fact sheet. I guess that would be for someone like Nick, the CFO, to be like, "Hey, this is when he has potential investors on the phone or talking to people about it." There's less interesting there, Ian, but there's still some stuff there if you want to go through quickly on the fact sheet.
I don't really, but because it really does regurgitate a lot of it, but. I think this is the one with something else we really wanted to point out about TomTom.
Wed Bush, who hires Michael Pachter, Wed Bush Security did this company overview winter 2020. So this is like a year and a half after the pitch deck. We know that this console's not coming out. It's delayed at least a year.
So this is like clearly... bullshit. One of these pages here, basically, it's just more bullshit. Talking about like iconic brand with premium titles and licensing, and you've got Pong and a picture of something that I can't make out, and then Jeopardy, Wheel of Fortune, Burger Time, Transformers. Underneath it, though, there's an asterisk that says currently in later stage discussions.
What page is this?
14. Yeah, sorry,
it's page 14.
Page 14. Currently in later stage discussion is next to like Transformers, Jeopardy, Wheel of Fortune. I guarantee you there were no late stage discussions going on. This is, again, pie in the sky wish casting. Wishing.
They said they had 88 games in the pipeline. 88 games. This is after the console. We know it's not coming out. It won't come out for at least a year. They're saying they had 88 games in development, including Wheel of Fortune, Transformers, Lunar Lander, Dig Dug, Burger Time, Night Driver, and a bunch of shit from these other companies. I mean, it's despicable and low. These are blatant lies.
Yes.
Lies. They're lies.
And then my favorite lie, page 15, television leadership. Tommy Tallarico, CEO, president.
Okay.
Gotcha.
30 years of experience.
30 years? Yeah, game sure. Okay, whatever. Right, yeah. I mean, tell
you
what.
You know you're a composer, but okay.
Hall of Fame Yankees minor league baseball player. What the fuck? Who puts that out? What? And he's not. He paid to go to a Yankees camp.
He did fantasy leagues for years. So a fantasy camp is that you pay thousands of dollars when you're a rich man, and it was never good enough to make a real team, and you pay thousands of dollars for a week experience where you get the older players from that team to train you, and you do like a couple of games,
throw the ball around with you, and yeah, I think after
you get your own uniform,
and I think after you do it five times, someone was saying they like put you in like a Hall of Fame.
Wow. Yeah. So Tommy is bragging
about going to fantasy camp.
He played cosplay baseball player and spent probably 25, 30 grand to do that over several years to say I'm like, in the Hall of
Fame.
Even
if this was true, what kind of fucking fragile human needs to put that on a list of their accomplishments when they're trying to make a video game console?
Well, you look at a lot of these, it's not pertinent.
Sure.
But I mean, like, it's just it's delusions of grandeur.
Yes.
It's literally the delusions of grandeur.
Yep.
It's like you paid money, which is fine. You have $5,000-$6,000 to blow because that's what these usually cost. You have money to blow. You're going to play some older, Yankee players. Of course, he's a Yankees fan. Of course, the Yankee fans aren't coming after me for saying that, but of course.
Fuck the Yankees.
There goes our Yankees audience. So it's all in good fun. But he does this and plays against some Yankees, quote unquote legends, because they usually the Hall of Famers don't play. They show up just for like a day, probably say hi.
Yeah.
They get some players, need some cash that to help train you. And you put that on your resume. Well, you want to cosplay as a CEO, you cosplay as a baseball player.
But like, are you five? are you a 5-year old, Tommy?
They thought they're going to get Sean Astin to promote.
Oh yeah, sure.
Why would Sean Astin and Jim Parsons promote this? Like, why? Vans, the shoes. Vans is listed. Vans, the shoes would do it. Really? And Legos, it's Lego, not Legos. They said it's Legos.
It's Lego. It's Lego bricks. Come on.
Come on. Even I know that.
Everyone knows this.
It's silly. There are scales about, we have the most affordable console. There's like these weird graphs that don't make any sense. I don't know if you saw that graph, one of these pages.
But that was also on.
It's on page 12. So
I think it was on the pitch.
Ease of play. And affordability, there's a chart, and like ease of play and affordability is a top right meaning.
Oh yeah, no, I'm right on it. Yeah, and it literally like this is kind of like the exit plan page. They just literally, we understand that graphs go up and to the right, so this is what we're gonna do.
So they think somehow the Intellivision would be easier to play than the Switch, which is notoriously easy to play the games.
Yeah.
And we've already seen videos where there's literally 2-minute tutorials about how to even use the fucking controller.
How to pick which control scheme you want.
How to play Shark. Like there's a tutorial before you have to actually pick it up and play. Just insane fucking things. Real quick, this was posted on Atari Age, Ian. Just a post that right now they're moving servers on Atari Age. But this was posted. This was sent to me beforehand. Someone that's been a long time Atari Age user that's very disappointed in how they've handled things in the past years. And do you want me to read it real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
I'll read it real quick. And we'll see what happens because of this. Again, this is a long time user. Albert posted there's one thread that's a long Atari Age discussion about the Amico. Someone said, please, if you want to discuss the Amico Fund, please do so without making blanket statements about the members and the site that simply aren't true. So someone was complaining that a lot of people enabled Tommy's bad behavior and people were taken for a ride because of that. And I agree.
Yeah, sure.
There wasn't the critical eye on this at all.
No, not at all.
So this longtime user, God's Labrat, or God's Labrat, said, sure, let's talk about the Amico. The Amico is quite simply a scam. By scam, I mean the people in charge of it took money for investments and pre-orders that they knew would not be fulfilled in the time frame specified. That is absolutely true. Mm-hmm. All evidence, I mean literally 100% of all the evidence available, indicates there was no way the original 10/10/2020 release date could have been met, and this was known in 2019. Like every grifter console released, all they ever had was a shell and hastily scrambled to put the insides together after the money was raised. This is not even disputed. What does seem to be in dispute is how this form enabled this grift and allowed Tommy Tallarico's outright lies to stand without scrutiny.
Yeah.
It is unacceptable that this would be the standard allowed here. This is the same form that took down the Clique Chameleon. However, for whatever reason, Tommy's scam was allowed to have its own free-running thread, which lasted years, and people were banned for asking questions he didn't like, for posting images he didn't approve of, or not, in quotes, reading the room correctly. Want to say I'm wrong? It's going to do more than saying, oh, that totally didn't happen, or yeah, it wasn't modded quite right. No, what Atari Age needs to do is to be transparent about what really happened. That means at bare minimum, the following three things. Number one, the Amico subforum should be returned to visibility, including all hidden posts. Readers need to see the discourse and decide for themselves if the banned posters truly deserve to be banned. Number two, a full list of all banned posters should be given, along with what mod banned them and why. Readers need to be able to see if the reasons given match the allegedly bannable posts. Number three, all of Tommy Tallarico's DM communication with Atari Age staff should be posted. Readers need to be able to judge for themselves what established the relationship between Tommy and Atari Age. I don't think this is what you want to see in Atari Age. If that's the case, join the club. Maybe you now feel what the rest of us have been felt watching Atari Age be transformed from seasoned perspectives on the entire gaming hobby to, in quotes, Tommy Tallarico's primary source for hand jobs. I think it's clear to everyone that Atari Age is no longer what it once was. The only question is, do you care enough to fix it, or will you just forever ignore Tommy Tallarico's stain on the website? See you in the funny papers.
Yeah, I mean,
that says it all to me.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot, you know, that they're asking for, but I mean, at the base of it, it can't just keep expecting it to go away.
You can't hand wave it. You can't you can't brush it under the rug.
It needs to be addressed.
There has to be transparency. What the hell happened? Why were at least one mods be able to do things with impunity? Why was Tommy Tallarico allowed to personally attack people constantly and just be given like a slap on the wrist?
Yeah.
Well, why? I want answers. Ian and I were personally affected by this. Others were too. That's all I got for this. So, like you said, this is going to be a lot more is going to come out.
Yeah.
A lot more.
Yeah, this isn't the end of the line.
This isn't the end of the line.
This isn't the finish line.
This portion of the CU podcast is brought to you by Monk Pack. Monk Pack offers low sugar, keto-friendly bars, which are plant-based, gluten-free, and non-GMO. They're the perfect snack for anyone who is trying to eat better or cut back on sugar and carbs without sacrificing taste. Monk Pack Keto Granola Bars and Nut and Seed Bars contain 1 gram of sugar or less, 2 to 3 grams of net carbs, and each bar contains 150 calories or less.
Monk Pack bars have an amazing chewy texture, and they come in delicious flavors like sea salt, dark chocolate, coconut cocoa chip, which is actually my favorite. I love anything coconut, and caramel sea salt. They're perfect for a quick breakfast, a snack between Zoom calls, or as a guilt-free decadent dessert. I often have one between doing this podcast and then doing my day job.
I'll have something like the peanut butter dark chocolate while I'm editing the podcast. They're great because you don't feel bad after eating them because they're not terrible for you.
Right. By shopping online, you can avoid another trip to the grocery store and have Monk Pack delivered right to your door. These bars are not just for people eating keto. They're a great snack for anyone looking to reduce their sugar intake while still enjoying delicious, flavorful snacks. They contain real ingredients that are delicious and nutritious for your whole family. And in addition to being keto-friendly, the bars are also gluten-free, plant-based, and non-GMO. There's no sugar, alcohols, soy, or artificial colors.
Get 20% off your first purchase of any Monk Pack product by visiting monkpack.com and entering our code CUPODCAST at checkout, or just click the link in the description below to get 20% off. Monk Pack is so confident in their product that it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll exchange the product or refund your money, whichever you prefer. So go get some yummy, healthy bars. Go to monkpack.com and use our code CUPODCAST to save 20% off, or click the link down below.
We got a Patreon, Ian.
We do. Patreon.com/CUPODCAST. You go money. You get the full video podcast. You get bonus podcast bits and bobs. You get hangouts once a month. You get writings. And you also get to vote in these poll topics.
You absolutely do, Ian. And in second place, I didn't know it was going to be this bad, is grading or reselling worse for video game collecting? 19%. And in first place, you got to put a hat on for the thumbnail. Ian's gaming habits at 40 versus 30. What has changed? Get the mic out of the way real quick, Ian. I need one more.
Okay.
So, Ian.
Yes.
You are 10 years older and wiser. What has changed between gaming now versus when you were 30 years old for you?
In general, just the way I look at collecting and gaming as a hobby, and all my hobbies, has drastically changed since I was 30. When I was 30, I just started to make when I moved out to San Diego, I didn't bring a lot of money with me. I wasn't making a lot of money. I was living paycheck to paycheck, for most of my first few years here. And around 30, I started to actually have some bankable income again.
Gotcha.
So I was, getting a little bit more into collecting, the PC Engine and the Game Boy stuff, but I still wasn't buying a ton. But I was certainly being a lot looser with it.
Okay.
And I was still constantly buying, any new title that came out that I wanted to play on a newer system. I was buying new systems fairly close to launch and, not doing a whole lot with it. I was also still buying like RPGs and things like that with the idea that I was going to find the time to actually play these. And I also, back then I was 100% consoles. I wasn't doing like any sort of gaming on PC.
You weren't doing mobile gaming at all? 2012, that's when
I never got into handheld gaming.
You mobile?
Mobile gaming. I obviously got very into handheld and portable gaming, but mobile as a platform, phone, iOS, Android, there are some games that I've played on phones that I think are very, very good, but as a platform, I cannot go back to it. It's weird. It's on me at all times, but I just don't play phone games.
Sure.
But I would say probably sometime, maybe right around 35, I just kind of looked around and was like, I have too much shit.
So 2017, 5 years
ago. Yeah, probably. I have too much shit. And I have too many games, and I always used to joke, hey, I'm buying all these games, it's a rainy day games, it's for retirement or whatever. But I'm just like, I'm just not going to get to all of these. I reduced a lot of my collections. I got rid of, I cut down a lot of my collections, between 30 and 40, I went from having my hand in all sorts of systems here and there to getting rid of my Nintendo games. Most of my DS and 3DS games, most of my Genesis games, I eliminated most of it. And the only physical collections I still had were PC Engine and Game Boy, really. And around this time, though, I actually finally started sitting down and playing games more again. I was in a point in my life where I was comfortable and I was, actually like dedicating some time to them. I was with someone, I'm with Vonnie. She didn't find like my game hobby weird or off-putting or anything like that. So, we'd play a lot of games together, stuff like that. But I'd say the big change that has really come about in the past 2 years is I have moved from being an almost entirely exclusively console gamer to almost an entirely PC gamer at this point.
Wow.
I can't remember the last game I bought for my PlayStation 4. I honestly can't remember the last time I turned it on. I have not been looking for a PS5 or an Xbox Series because I just don't feel like I need one.
Okay.
I bought this laptop for work last year. It's got a 3080 RTX in it. Like, it has a
fucking, it can handle stuff.
It can pump out PS5 level graphics when I hook it up to my TV. Like, it outputs 4K. Yeah. It's
I was
nuts.
Gonna say, you hook up to a monitor, TV.
It is a current gen system.
So is cost one of the factors why you didn't want to spend another like $500, $600 on a PS5?
Well, that is one of them, but it's just that most of the stuff that I can get, utility is nice, but most of the stuff that I can get, or most of the games that I want to play on like a PS5 or an Xbox, are on PC now too. There are certainly things I will miss. There are exclusives that I won't get, but
it's not worth it for you.
It's not worth it for me because I'm not going to get to them anyway. This is a clear point. This is where, like, 5 years ago, I absolutely would have gone and gotten the PS5, and I probably already have 5 or 6 games still sealed waiting for me to say I'm going to play them someday. I miss releases that I've been looking forward to coming out all the time now because it's just not realistic for me to think I'm going to have the time to play these. And it's, as much as I hate to say it, it's not if this is the hobby that you like, if you like the collecting aspect. But to me, it's literally just flushing $60 down the toilet when a new Switch game comes out.
Well, yeah, to me, it's weird when people start, quote unquote, collecting the newer releases because...
Especially
because
they're only going to get cheaper. You don't need... If I'm not going to sit down and play a game that week...
Yeah.
I'm not going to buy it.
It's very rare for a new release, unless it's like a weird thing like Devil's Third, where like it was a limited
edition. Sure, a limited edition or something like that. But
for the most part, new games go down, especially if they're used.
Yeah.
Even sealed ones, you'll be able to find years later for cheaper.
Right.
Like, that's not going to be a problem for any new game going forward. There's going to be a sealed one laying around if you're going to sell it. But I guess what you're saying is, yeah, you don't want to spend $60 on a bunch of games. They're it's like buying a new car. It automatically depreciates right. after you buy it. Like, what's the point of doing that?
And I was getting back into a habit with that was getting bad, you know, before I kind of stopped where, you know, it's not like I was overspending, but I'd be like, I want this game. This game looks good that Nintendo's coming out. Release day. Go buy it. Put it on my table. I'll be honest. I still haven't played fucking Nintendo. I haven't played Switch Sports. Bought it. Never played it. It just sits there.
You wanted to, but it's just like time, it's everything else going on, responsibilities.
And I'm trying to
Now, is that a... Sorry, Coach Rob. Is that a result of the new job partially?
Yeah, it is.
Or is
because
that lifestyle.
It's lifestyle and part of the new job. My job is, you know, relatively busy. It's not crazy hours or anything like that, but it's relatively busy. I do this, and because I work from home, I have to clearly compartmentalize certain parts of my day.
Sure.
Otherwise, I don't feel right. So, it doesn't feel good to me to work all day, close my laptop, and then immediately sit down and start playing a game.
Sure.
Because I was just on the computer forever. I haven't done anything. I've been sitting around all day. So I have to, what I do is I usually, you know, after I finish work, I'm like, I have to go work out or I have to go walk to the grocery store. I need to do something separate. Mm-hmm. Then I make dinner. And then at nighttime, that's usually when it's my leisure time. But by then, Vonnie's usually home. And, you know, sometimes I want to watch a movie or something with her. Because I have to make sure I'm getting up and out of the house because of working from home, it cuts away a chunk of time that if I was working out of the house, I would not feel bad about using for video games, if that makes sense.
Sure.
If I was coming home from a job, walking into the house, cracking a Diet Coke and turning on the video game, that's one thing. You know, that's winding down after work.
Sure.
But if I'm working from home and I'm literally moving 5 feet, it just feels like I got to get up and do something.
Sure.
So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I do think, honestly, in some ways, I might be playing more games than I did 10 years ago, but you know, it's all roguelikes, it's all shooters, it's all quick, fast stuff, you know, that has
arcade
like,
experiences
yeah. or, you know, experiences that can be longer, but they move in quick bursts that I can save and come back to. So that's mostly it.
Yeah, more, I played Mario 35. I like the fact that there can be quick games, but you
perfect
can play
example.
For, you play for like 45 minutes and get a bunch of games in.
If you want to get two games in and go do something, great. But if you want to veg out, it's good enough, it's fun enough that you can spend an hour on it.
I'm still pissed about that.
And that's honestly, those are the types of games that I'm constantly looking forward to. Stuff that has maybe maximum like a 30-minute loop that I can then, I'll go again. And if it's 15 minutes or 10 minutes, even better.
So you still have an interest in video games. That hasn't changed. It might have gotten stronger in some ways, but it's shifted with the lifestyle, new job. You're thinking about, you don't collect as much as you used to.
Well, and I think that's
system.
That is the big thing, is I buy and collect way less than I did 10 years ago.
Sure. You're also collecting other things. I don't know if you're collecting vinyl more, but you also collect vinyl.
In spurts, yeah. I mean, I obviously have a lot of records. You know, I haven't gone to the record shop in 2 months, but that's because I was going every week for 3 months, and it's like, okay, I need to take...
You're going every week for 3 months?
Yeah. I mean, lots of record collectors do, because you want to see what gets brought in for trade-ins. Yeah. And I was getting great shit good prices.
Well, I mean, that's why people were out early at Kobe's. They were the vinyl collectors were out there. Maybe less nowadays, but they were always out there sifting through, and you see a guy with a few, you knew it was something special from like the 60s or 70s, you know what I mean, or 80s.
And I do, you know, and you're right, a lot of it is just other interests too, and something I didn't even really think about, but it's very true, is I love to cook. Even when I'm like at my worst, cooking is one thing that brings me joy and order, and the way I like to cook is not the most cost-effective way to cook. I like to get up, and I like to walk to the grocery store, and I like to see what looks good. I like to check out
you're
the
taking
produce.
The OG like experience. You go to the market, you're buying the stuff to make
zen. I buy it fresh, and that's honestly how I've cooked for years and years, and it's not, like I said, it's not financially,
it's not efficient
but I love it.
That's your process.
But you know, I get up, I go to the supermarket, and you know, I mean, sometimes I'm making cool frugal meals for like $15, but sometimes I'm splashing out $40 to $50 just for that night's dinner. And that's money that...
It's a lot of money for a meal.
That's money that you... Yeah, it is, but I'm fine with being like, I'm just not spending it on video games now. I'm spending it on this.
That's what you're enjoying more. You see the value in that.
Right. I'd rather spend 2 hours shopping and making a nice meal than I would spending the same amount of money to play a game for maybe 5 hours and forget about it.
It's a more fulfilling hobby.
Yeah.
The experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe it calms you. Maybe it's just...
it's definitely
your mind
calming.
Likes it. You never told me that. You never told me that you buy greens just for that day's dinner.
Oh, yeah. No, that's pretty much all my meals are like that.
Gotcha. Wish I had that time. That's interesting, Ian. Maybe I'll do one about it at some point. It'd be some similarities, some not. I think real quick what I would...
Zeros and fives.
Zeros and fives? What? I gotta wait 3 more years. I should have done it in 2020.
I'm fucking around.
I should have done it in the pandemic.
I think it would be fun to hear your take on something like this.
Well,
maybe we can do that.
Well, you know, it would give you a chance to get more digs at me how I don't play games for fun. But it's sort of like the thing where you come back to, well, if you're constantly surrounded by video games as your job, it's tough to then go back into it for leisure.
Sure.
It's just tough. You need a break from it.
And this isn't even like so much of a me like growing up thing. This isn't like a difference between 30 and 40. But I did start enjoying video games a lot more again after I stopped working at Luna.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
See? So then you're on my side a little bit.
Yeah.
If I get out of the video game sort of world here, I could go back and play some games for fun. It's like rediscovering an old love.
Yeah,
you're like you take it for granted. You're around it for a bunch. It goes away, and you come back to it.
Well, when I started cooking again, that's really what it was. I stopped cooking for like 3 years because I got sick and couldn't do it. And when I returned to it, it was like, holy fuck, I can't believe I ever stopped.
Yeah, why not? We got voicemails. You go to anchor.fm/CU podcast. Keep it short and sweet. I've been noticing. The times in general, on average, have been going down.
All right.
On the voice messages. So you're starting to listen to Uncle Pat here, because I got to listen to a lot of these. And if I see the longer ones, I'm just telling you, it's less likely to make the show. I'm just saying, I got to be straight with you there. So here's the first one that I wish I had queued up. I thought I did.
Hey, guys. Mike from Jersey.
Mike!
I heard you been talking about Phantasy Star on Dreamcast a couple episodes ago, and it got me thinking. If you look at eBay, Dreamcast network adapters go for upwards of $300 to $400.
Wow, really?
I'm wondering why there hasn't been a Kickstarter project or something to create an aftermarket Dreamcast NIC card. Thanks. Love the show.
Well, what's the market size? How many people would buy it? I mean, how many people are going to be playing these streaming games?
Right. I mean, 300 to 400 bucks. That's a lot. I mean, it would tell you that there is some sort of market there. But yeah, how easily could you satiate it? And how quickly could you satiate it? Because if there's, you know, 200 people out there right now who desperately want one, and you make a run of like 1,000 of these. Yeah, I just
broadband adapter Dreamcast DC Japan 129. So I don't think it's 400.
Well, Japan, I think it probably means the US one.
Oh, it's not as compatible. You can't use the Japanese one.
I don't believe so. No.
Really?
Yeah, I don't believe they cross over.
That would be, why wouldn't the hardware be similar? I wonder. There's none for sale in the US. I was trying to find those Dreamcasts that had the Ethernet one built in, the later ones. They're hard to find, I guess.
Well, the Ethernet there is there, but broadband is what people are looking for. They're looking for broadband.
I thought broadband is Ethernet. No? I'm not talking phone line. I'm talking, I thought some had a broadband built in. Am I getting that right? I thought some did. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
Yeah, we're all wrong.
I'm not a Dreamcast expert. That's not my thing. But I thought at some point they produced, a small batch. Next one here.
Ian, Pat, this is Matt from Rochester, New York again. Ian, by any chance, whenever you go back to Buffalo, do you ever stop at a place called Ichiban Games? It's run by a place, his name is Mark. I think you know him from the past. And Pat, since you're from the upper Northwest and you're from New Jersey, do we have to pronounce the name? Is it Mario or do you always pronounce Mario? Just wondering. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Do you have any idea what Matt's talking about?
Yeah, I've never been to Ichiban Games, but I did do a convention that guy put on years and years ago.
I'm sure that you knew about
it. Yeah, no, I mean, I've never been to his store.
Oh, the old Mario versus Mario debate. Hey, this is what I'm going to say. When you're Italian-American, Jersey, New York, almost no one pronounces it Mario. It's Mario. And I think the reason why is because when a lot of the immigrants came over, they wanted to sort of Americanize their names. One of the first things you do is sort of change how you speak a little bit. And I think that's why it became a lot of Marios. I personally knew a Mario. No one called him Mario. He was Mario.
Huh.
I mean, I'm just saying that's the way it was. I'll ask Frank about that, but I think that's just how people pronounced it. It wasn't the short A. It was the long A.
Right.
That's just what we did. It was a version of a short. I forget what it's called, the inflection. That's just what it is. And there's even some old Nintendo commercials where they say Mario on it. Some say Mario, some say Mario. And it could be a regional thing, but yeah, that just happened. I don't know. That's what I got to say. You didn't know a Mario? Did you know any Mario?
I knew a Mario. I did not know any Marios.
Okay. That's just the way it was. Because people used to come after me in the early NES Pump videos because I said Mario Brothers. And it's like, that's what all the kids called it. No one said Mario Brothers in school.
Right.
People said Super Mario Brothers. That's what we did. It's a Jersey thing, New York thing. Next.
Hey guys, this is Mike from California.
Mike.
My question is, given the timing of the recent recession that's been going on and how that's starting to somewhat overlap with the timing of, you know, the downfall and demise, at least officially, of the Amico, do you think they'll try and use that as an excuse or as like a scapegoat to try and avoid any blame for their, unsuccess? Or do you think that they probably won't use that?
There's no chance in hell that the Amico is not blamed on at least five fucking things.
But I don't think you're going to have that come out. No. You're not going to see that statement. This is why you're never going to see the postmortem.
Yeah. This isn't like a movie. The villain is not going to appear at the end and be like, and I could have done it if it wasn't for you meddling kids. No, that's what I keep saying about this story. There's not going to be that magic endpoint that people want.
If that documentary happens and someone sits Tommy down, I'm sure he'll blame haters. He'll blame the drunken podcasters like Mike Kennedy tried to do. They'll blame the chip shortage, but none of that stands up to scrutiny. It just doesn't.
Right.
The world went on and everything else got made by competent companies. Even in a recession, people still buy stuff. They just buy it less. New products come out even during a recession.
Yeah.
It's just silly stuff from people that believe in the secret and realize that you actually have to be competent and not a con man in order to come out with successful products. Next.
Ian, Pat, Chris from Boulder, Colorado.
Boulder.
Just want to know if you guys had any memories or experiences with screen peeking in a split-screen shooter or a sports game, picking plays. I remember one time in high school, I had a buddy over, and we were playing Halo, and he killed me, and I ended up tackling him in the wood chair.
What?
About 2 a.m. Needless to say, he went home. I was probably in the wrong.
Oh, wait, hold on a second. That's a very weird needless to say. What happened? You assaulted your friend at 2 a.m.? Yeah. Needless to say, he was in the hospital.
I was probably in the wrong on that one.
Okay.
Keep up the good work.
Please. I think you were probably in the wrong, Chris.
Yes.
But I wanted to knock out melon-headed Kevin when he looked at my controller playing Tecmo Bowl. How is he, Ian, how is he five plays in a row, blowing up my plays? Because he did the old eye look down. No honor.
Yeah.
Same type person that would cheat at a board game.
Yep.
Should be fucking state-sanctioned corporal punishment.
Drug out into the street and shot.
There you go. Put up against a wall like a third world country.
Cheating at board games is lowest.
If you're gonna cheat at a board game, you're gonna cheat at anything. That's why I look at it. I mean, seriously, right?
Yes.
Who cheats at a board game?
I don't know.
Yeah. Or Tecmo Bowl. Steal money from the fucking bank in Monopoly, shit like that. You don't do these things. You just don't. Next.
Lose with dignity.
Thank you.
Hey, fellas. Steve on Long Island.
Hey, Steve.
Ian, we'll fellow August Niner, myself. Our birthday's coming up. Pat, this one's for you. I used to love your NES app until it broke. I know you had problems with the developer. I want to know if there's any plans to revive it and or launch a Super Nintendo app. Anyway, thanks for all that you guys do, and I'll see you at the Long Island Retro Gaming Convention.
Oh, what perfect timing. Long Island coming up. Birthday. Hey. Happy birthday, Steve.
Yes, happy birthday, sir.
Stay tuned is what I'm going to say about the NES app. It has not been to my standards, but stay tuned. That's all I'm going to say right now. And then once the NES one, if we get it to the place where I'm happy with it, we'll then move forward with the Super Nintendo one. So come back to me later on about that. Next.
Greetings, gentlemen. Sean hailing from South Carolina, father of the swearing police.
What?
Curious of your thoughts on the risk versus reward of having a big ticket item like a sealed stadium events out on the convention floor like there was at the Southeast Game Exchange. Thank you.
I've heard of games being picked off at conventions off tables, but it's very, very rare, and those big ticket items you will not be able to get your hands on easy. They'll be behind those cases with the glass. So I don't see that happening.
It always makes me nervous when I see people doing it, but it is a pretty commonplace thing. Comic-Con is full of high ticket items, and I mean, it
would be tough not to be seen if you try to rob someone. That's the problem,
right?
I mean, there's
eyes everywhere.
There's stuff at Comic-Con worth, you know, $1 million sometimes, like an old Action Comics number one or Detective Comics 27. Like, it's literally worth $1 million or more, and it's behind a glass. Like, I mean, if someone was bold enough, crack the glass, take it, and run. The other problem is, though, that stuff is so hard to move. That stuff is, like, not one of a kind, but, like, close to it, those old comics and some of these games. Like, if someone stole a Steam Events, and, like, who are you going to sell it to that doesn't know that a Steam Events got stolen?
Exactly.
It happened with the store theft in Missouri. Like, these are some weird items that you, like a test card on the NES or a weird Atari sealed game. Like, it's kind of tough. So the only thing I did was I showed off the NWC cards at SoCal. It was the Super Bowl where Atlanta Falcons choked to the Patriots. That's 2017.
Yeah.
So we had an armed guard standing next to it because at that point, you know, those two games, I mean, God, now you would definitely need an armed guard or someone or some security. But back then, those two games, probably 2017, were worth, I probably combined, you want to say 100, 125,000, something like that, probably combined. Now it's probably four times that, you know, like, or whatever it is. So, that's my experience with it. We let people take pictures, but there was a guy off to the side that was looking.
Yeah.
Now, if you wanted to pull off a game heist, you'd have to know the targets. You'd have to but then it's like, just rob a fucking bank. You're doing armed robbery. You might as well try to rob a bank. I'm not telling you to rob a bank, but I'm saying it probably would be easier to get away with it versus stealing these old games because you got to sell them. It's like stealing fine art. They're like one of a kind of things. Who are you going to sell them to? Like, someone's going to keep it in their basement forever? How do you get away with it?
Yeah.
I mean, it has happened, though. People got away with it. That Boston one, the documentary on on Netflix, that Boston robbery. They never found those paintings.
Oh, yeah. No, that was crazy. Amazing. I was going to bring that up. Actually.
Several paintings were stolen and never were
cut out of the frames, too, which is the weirdest thing.
And then they roll them. I mean, it's what you do. That's how you do it. Do a few more here.
It's Mike from Wawa, New Jersey.
Mike?
Yes, the boardwalk in Wawa has turned into our arcade casino slot machines, unfortunately. There's no more Mortal Kombat 2 or Street Fighter Alpha. Mm-hmm. I was wondering what you thought of the movie Apocalypse Now.
Wait a second. We just veered off. I was like, okay, Wildwood, Jersey Boardwalk, video games, arcades. What do we think about Apocalypse Now?
Tonal whiplash. Feel like I'm going to have to go fucking have an adjustment on my neck. I wish I had. I've never seen it. Never seen the movie.
I've seen parts of it.
Never seen it.
Obviously, it's supposed to be brilliant. That's not the end of the call, by the way. I got to see where that goes. Okay, yeah. What's next here?
What's your thoughts? Have you seen it?
There's no ending. I just. What's your thoughts? Have you seen it? And just dead air for 10 seconds. Okay. All right.
Thank you for the call. It's amused me greatly. I wish I could tell you what I thought of Apocalypse Now, but I have not seen it.
I wish that was the last call because that would have been a nice end. We'll do a couple more here. Okay.
Wow. I got to get to work and then birthday stuff. So let's nail out one or two here.
Hi, Pat and Ian. My name's TJ Neal from Ontario, Canada.
Yeah.
Just wanted to ask you guys, what game do you feel like has the best ending? And also, do you guys have any games that you continuously feel like you beat maybe every year? For me, that's Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past. You have to finish that one yearly. Thanks, guys.
I don't have a game anymore I beat yearly. Back in the heavy emulator days when I was... You know, just a little more hobbyist versus doing video game content professionally. I would probably beat Contra every year. I'd probably beat Legend of Zelda. You know, I would probably do some of those or any every other year, but not anymore.
I don't think I've done anything yearly in a long time or really maybe ever, but I did.
What'd you say, Ian?
It's been a while.
It's been a while. I used to go back and play through Dragon Quest, okay. Dragon Warrior once every couple of years.
The first one?
Yeah, I love it.
Grind that shit out?
I love it. Yeah, I love it. Love the sound, love the grinding, love the art.
Kill the same enemies 1,000 times in a row to get the
satisfying.
Get the middle slime.
Oh, and for games with the best ending, I think Donut County actually has a great ending.
That's a tough one for me. I don't fixate on the endings of games.
Neither
that
do
much,
I, so. But I have played through Donut County. I played through Donut County once. I've played the game through three times. I did it the third time just because I liked the ending so much and I wanted to experience the ending again.
I think Contra had a very satisfied ending as a kid when I played it. Going back to Contra because, you know, the island explodes.
Pretty good.
Helicopter picks you up. Like, pretty cinematic ending.
Yeah. Yeah. That it's not just a congratulations. Yeah. You're done.
I mean, like Ninja Gaiden, the same way, but I never beat Ninja Gaiden as a kid. But that's, you know, literally the cinematic. You see the castle crumble, stuff right. like that. Yeah.
Hey guys, Jason from Central PA again. Question for both of you. What is a product that does not exist, but that you really wish did? Something that you'd say, hey, if they made that, I'd be there day one. For me, I've been on a mini arcade kick lately, the Taito Egret and Astro City, Neo Geo and stuff like that. And for me, it would be a Konami beat 'em up mini arcade, Simpsons, Ninja Turtles, X-Men, and that kind of thing. But anyway, wondering what it would be for you guys. Thanks for the podcast. Have a great day.
I'm still waiting for a Zapper solution for non-CRTs.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun. So. I would really love to have that. Otherwise, I don't know. There's not a whole lot that, I mean, I can think of that I'd want. Although, if you're talking like the mini arcade stuff, I would love to see a one dedicated to shooters that did the same vertical horizontal Tate mode thing that the Egret, I think it's the Egret, does.
Hi, Ben Ian. You know that guy that dropped out Battle Track and Field 2. My view is that just because a game is hard does not automatically give it a fuck you.
I agree. Remember that caller a few weeks ago that didn't like Track and Field 2? Yeah, it's difficult, but some difficult games. Is he saying fuck you to the caller? Was that a caller yelling at someone else? Or are they saying doesn't mean the game gets a fuck you?
I don't know. Let's cap it off with one more, and then I gotta go.
Oh yeah, do one more. This one is from Vince.
Pat Nian, this is Vince again from Northern California. Super serious question. Ooh. How do you guys roll up your classic video game controller cords?
Yep. Where's one? I'll get it for
super
you.
Serious. Thanks, guys.
Well, here's a birthday present. We'll get one for Ian to do real quick.
Yeah.
This is how Ian showed me, I think, back in the day, or I discovered it too. Ian, wrap up that N64 controller.
I call it the Luna Knot, but it's got other names. So you take your cord, you fold it in half, you give yourself a little tail, just like that, right? Then you fold it again.
Okay, this is not how I do it. Okay, so you're basically folding it constantly, like a bed sheet. You're folding a bed sheet.
Double it up, and then you wrap the plug around it, and then pop it through. And the reason is...
It holds it together.
It holds it together, but this is really good for hanging on pegs.
Okay. Okay, so I come to the same conclusion, I just do it a different way. So I wrap it, and you have like a little loop, and you put it through. And yeah. It's convenient. So whenever I see someone...
Doesn't damage it. You're not putting stress. You're not putting stress on this, the cord to controller connection.
No, it's just... The only way to do it, really. There's not like another really smart way to do it, but the sheet folding, Ian, is ingenious. I didn't realize.
Oh, yeah. It's a good way to do it.
You should hold this up and be like, how do you, that'd be the thumbnail bait.
Yeah.
How do you do your controller cards? there's Ian's birthday present to you all.
Yeah.
And when I see someone at a convention, they want me to sign like a Zapper or NES, like a little kid or something, I'll show them. This is how you do it. So, you know.
I can't pick up it's just burned into me. I have to pick up cords and wrap them now.
That's a tight loop, Ian. That's a tighter loop than I do with that. That's a tight loop.
Thanks. I've gotten good over the years.
All right. Well, there you go. That'll be the thumbnail. We'll just do that. All right. Well, that was a fun one, Ian. Nice birthday.
Yeah, it was.
A little longer because I think the intro went long, to be honest. The intelligence was long, but I think the intro went.
Yeah.
We'll talk about Heritage Auctions crap next week. It won't be as...
fresh, but it'll still at least be timely something. Enough.
We're going to a convention, so maybe we won't have a topic.
We can always talk about it there, too. Yeah.
No, we can't there, because that's a lot of research and stuff.
Well, we'll figure it out. We'll see you in a week.
All right, we'll see you. Bye! Happy birthday!
Thank you.